Comic books have been a mainstay for decades, growing our imaginations and giving us hope when the world around us seems perhaps a little bleak. It's an escape that we now get a chance to experience in theaters as well. For the past decade, we've seen the world of superhero movies grow into its very own genre. And with the recent announcement of multiple films and TV shows being released by Marvel Studios over the next few years, it's apparent that superheroes aren't going anywhere anytime soon. Culture Shift's Tia Graham spoke with David Betancourt, a comic culture reporter with the Washington Post, about the golden age of superhero films, the building of cinematic universes, and the expanding genre.
David, where are we right now in the comic book cinematic universe? How did we get here? And where are we right now?
Well, what we're seeing right now is the remnants of the Big Bang from that first Avengers movie in 2012. The genesis point of the Marvel Cinematic Universe goes all the way back to 2008 with the first Iron Man movie.
It is one thing to question the official story and another thing entirely to make wild accusations or insinuate that I'm a superhero. I'm just not the hero type, clearly. Truth is, I am Iron Man.
But for the next 4 years, it was almost like, okay, can they really do this? Because Marvel Studios laid out, I mean, they weren't even really Marvel Studios back then. They were kind of just like, you know, with the help of Paramount, kind of, you know, putting these movies out. But once they realized they were about to be a powerhouse, they turned into Marvel Studios. But starting in 2008 with Iron Man, you had Iron Man. You had Thor with Chris Hemsworth. You had Captain America with Chris Evans. You had an Incredible Hulk movie that ended up changing because it started with Ed Norton and now there's Mark Ruffalo there. But they laid it out from the beginning what their intentions were, but no one knew if it was going to work. No one had ever tried that before. Movies being interconnected over, you know, with years in between them, it had never been done before. So when you get to 2012 and the Avengers happen, you have the huge, gigantic $200+ million opening weekend, and it's basically everything they want it to be. That's when the true impact was there.
Even if Barton didn't tell Loki about the tower.
The Stark Tower, that big ugly.
I should probably look into that once my decryption program finishes breaking into all of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s secure files.
Blueberry? Yet you're confused about why they didn't want you around.
An intelligence organization that fears intelligence, historically not awesome.
We should follow them.
Following is not really my style.
Back from when Netflix had a deal with Marvel and they were producing Daredevil and Luke Cage, eventually the Defenders, Jessica Jones. We mentioned The Boys over at Amazon. You know, every major outlet, every major streamer has a superhero property. It doesn't always work. We've recently seen over at Netflix, they've lost the Marvel properties due to Disney Plus coming to be. But they tried it with Mark Millar's Jupiter's Legacy that wasn't very well received, so it doesn't seem like they're going to be continuing there, especially with everything that's going on with Netflix. But we are in an era where the success of Marvel Studios, the hunger from the fans for something like this was intense, and they rewarded it by, you know, these movies don't make the money they do by just, you know, someone going and seeing it once. We're talking about a dedicated fan base that spends all year talking about this movie, goes and sees them 3, 4, or 5 times. I know because I'm that exact same type of person. Pre-pandemic, that's exactly how I treated these movies. And we've also seen that it's not easy to duplicate because what's going on at Warner Brothers Discovery right now with the DC brand, from the fallout of the Zack Snyder drama to canceling Batgirl, which is just, you know, I still can't believe they spent almost $100 million and we're not even going to see that movie. What we've seen right now is superheroes are the real deal. It's a true genre that's not going anywhere, just like you're always going to have horror movies, just like you're always going to have mysteries, just like you're always going to have drama and romance. Superheroes are always going to be there, but it's not easy to do, and only one person right now is doing it.
To start around 2012, we get that first Avengers movie. It's a huge success. Of course, the Marvel Studios knew this is something that they wanted to happen. But after the success, what are some of the things that we instantly started to see roll out of other studios at the same time?
Okay, 2012 was really, you know, the MCU got started in 2008, but the hype machine really was born in 2012 when that first Avengers movie came out, a combination of Iron Man, the Iron Man franchise, Captain America franchise, Incredible Hulk franchise, Thor, all put together. We're seeing all these heroes together on one team. It had never been done before. The hype was huge, and the box office delivered. That's a billion-dollar movie that had a $200 million opening weekend. The after effect of that was the impact on their biggest rival, DC Comics, was huge. DC Comics had just finished Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy in that same year. So The Dark Knight Rises with Tom Hardy as Bane.
Not as serious as yours, I fear. Let's not stand on ceremony here, Mr. Wayne.
And, you know, you also had Catwoman in there. There was a brief, you know, Robin appearance. But 2012 represented the end of the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy over at DC and Warner Brothers. And at that time, Christopher Nolan was the guy. You know, he was handling their biggest franchise, Batman, but he did not have any interest in being a Kevin Feige, the president of Marvel Studios. He did not want to be a Kevin Feige figure in terms of helping them figure out what they wanted to do with all their other heroes. So what happens is when Zack Snyder comes in and does Man of Steel, which comes out in 2013.
Kal-El, it is.
I have so many questions. Where do I come from? Why did you send me here?
You came from Krypton. A world with a much harsher environment than Earth's.
All of a sudden, there's this real, almost unrealistic pressure for DC and Warner Brothers to unify the Justice League on screen. And we saw the impact of the Avengers by how quickly and inorganically, DC Comics tried to do that. And I say inorganically because Marvel kind of just like naturally and organically grew those franchises. Here's an Iron Man movie. Here's a Captain America movie. Here's a Thor movie. Here's a Hulk movie. Now we're going to put them all together after years of building your trust, and here are the Avengers. Whereas over at DC, and really the kind of unfair pressure that was put on Zack Snyder to produce the same type of moment, is you have Man of Steel, and then the next sequel, Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, everyone gets thrown into the mix. So when Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice comes out, the sequel to Man of Steel, it's not even a true Superman sequel. It's what it is them taking one movie and using that for a reason to bring the Justice League together. So within that movie, you had Superman die, you had Cyborg, The Flash, Aquaman, all making these quick cameo appearances, and then that led into the Justice League. It wasn't nearly as organic, but let's face it, DC needed to catch up. And I think we've seen with, you know, the unsuccessful, there's really no other way to describe it, but Justice League was unsuccessful. That should have been an easy $1 billion at the box office, and they did not make that. Obviously, they ended up with two different versions. We finally saw the Snyder Cut not too long ago, but it is not easy to do, but you can't help but see the influence of Marvel Studios by more or less dictating and saying, hey, we've got it covered when it comes to connectivity and these universes being connected and all these characters knowing each other, and you're going to see them together. DC has not been able to do that successfully, and really, if they want to have success further down the road, they should probably just try and establish their franchises. You know, they've got Shazam. They've got Black Adam coming. These are movies that can breathe on their own and don't have to feel like they're being connected to 50 other things. And that's going to be DC's best shot at reclaiming some of their former glory.
And we talk about that decade-long, that longevity. We're starting to see, especially when we talk about Black Panther 2017, but we're starting to see more representation in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, especially, like I said, 2017. We saw an entire black cast. We've gotten Shang-Chi now. We've gotten a few other films that we're going to see coming in the future. We've gotten Ms. Marvel. So we're seeing a lot of diversity being added to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And, you know, a lot of that starts with Black Panther in 2017. Can you talk about the reception there when that first dropped?
Well, Black Panther was just, there's no other way to describe Black Panther other than it was a phenomenon. And it was so big and so such a gigantic moment for Marvel Studios and for black people all over the world because it represented seeing yourself as a superhero truly for the first time. I mean, if we think about the Marvel Cinematic Universe pre-Black Panther, are there important black characters? Yes, you have Samuel L. Jackson, Nick Fury, You've got Anthony Mackie playing the Falcon, Captain America's sidekick, and he's now the new Captain America. But it's not the same thing as the Black Panther was always, on the comic book side, the most important, popular, cool, legitimate superhero, black superhero of all time. And that impact translated from the comic book page to the movie, which was just a phenomenon.
He lives.
Mr. Tucker! What's up? I never yielded. And as you can see, I am not dead.
And what we've seen since Black Panther is, you know, this is something that we already know. Catering to diverse audiences is just good for business. It's not about, you know, politics. It's not about trying to be one way or other. It's about everyone deserves to feel like they can be a hero. Everyone deserves to see themselves in the heroic world. The beautiful thing about Black Panther is the superhero was black. The love interest was black. The villain was black. The supporting cast was black. His all-black bodyguards, Dora Milaje, were all black women. I mean, this is imagery that we are not used to taking in all together in one package. And that's what Black Panther did back in 2017.
Since the loss of Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, we're seeing some changes, of course, with Black Panther 2. We're going to see some new things, maybe even see a new person donning that suit. If you could talk a little bit about that very impactful trailer that was released recently at Comic-Con, Black Panther 2, and just go through that if you can, and especially go through the soundtrack, that the song that was used, Tim's No Woman, No Cry, and blending into Kendrick Lamar. I mean, it gave me chills.
No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. Little darling, don't shed no tear.
No. Look, that was an emotional trailer, wasn't it? I have since watched that trailer probably 200 times. Like, I have definitely contributed to the 30-plus million views that it now has on YouTube. But when they debuted that trailer at Comic-Con, which blew everyone out of the water, and I believe they showed it twice there because the reception was so great. It was an incredible moment because, let's face it, we did not know how they were going to move on from the death of Chadwick Boseman. Wakanda Forever, the sequel to Black Panther, was pretty much written, and they were going into production months before Chadwick Boseman died. So Chadwick dies in August of 2020, and all of a sudden Ryan Coogler has to go back to the drawing board and rewrite the movie, keeping a lot of the same elements in there, but obviously having to pivot to someone taking up the mantle of that Black Panther and addressing that, you know, Chadwick's character T'Challa dies in the movie as well. In terms of the music, it was such a beautiful, there was a Nigerian music artist who sang Bob Marley's version of No Woman, No Cry. You know, that song, if you get deep into the lyrics, is about, you know, telling a woman, there may not be a man here, but you're going to be okay. That song is literally what the women of Wakanda are going through because it's on their shoulders now. This is a movie about strong women warriors, Wakandan warriors, taking up the mantle that Chadwick left behind. So using No Woman, No Cry, but also showing that they're all grieving, but that they're going to be strong enough to persevere and move on. You know, we see Shuri shedding a tear. We see Ramonda, played by Angela Bassett, who delivers the only words in the trailer, saying,
I am queen of the most powerful nation in the world, and my entire family is gone. Have I not given everything?
You see the mural of Chadwick Boseman's face, and then you transition into Kendrick Lamar's All Right, which, as we know, was a huge musical moment in the Black Lives Matter movement. That song means a lot to black people. So to say one song saying these strong, beautiful black women are going to be okay, and then for Kendrick to say, hey, and that was for all of them. That wasn't just for them. The song is about what the characters are going through, but it's also about what we are going through. So the No Woman, No Cry was about what the characters are going through. And when you get to Kendrick's, we're going to be all right. That's for us. That's for the fans. That's saying, we know it hurts. We know we're all sad that Chadwick's not here, but we've made this for you anyway, and we're all going to be okay.
We talk about representation in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We're seeing indigenous representation on a pretty large scale in this movie. I've seen the trailer, of course, like most of us have. It's a beautiful underwater world that we're going to see with Namor. Talk about that representation. Talk about adding that in and adding another layer of representation.
I think it's just beautiful. I myself being my father, you know, I'm African-American maternally. My mother's African-American. My father's family descends from Puerto Rico. My grandfather came here to the United States when he was 8 years old. And obviously many Latinos descend from indigenous bloodlines. That's just a part of the culture. And for them to give an indigenous feel to Atlantis, I don't know if they're going to call it Atlantis in the movie. I don't think they are, just because Aquaman is already calling it Atlantis, you know, in the Marvel Comics Atlantis. But, you know, Namor, the Submariner, the character played by Tenoch Huerta, is a Mexican actor. He's a Mexican actor of indigenous descent. And he's been very vocal. And I know this being Latino, being a Spanish speaker and consuming Spanish-speaking entertainment. People that look like Tenoch Huerta and people that look like me, he and I are about the same color, aren't used to seeing ourselves in heroic roles when we dive into Spanish-speaking entertainment. Tenoch Huerta was a part of Narcos on Netflix, which is one of my favorite shows. But Narcos kind of follows the same trend that many of the Latin American entertainment shows do in terms of featuring mostly white Latinos in the important protagonist roles and giving people that look like Tenoch darker skin, more ethnic looking, giving them, you know, oh, you can be the bad guy, or you can be the drug dealer. Tenoch knows how big of a deal it is that he is in this role, because he's playing a king, he's playing a rival to Wakanda, he's the ruler of a nation. You know, he is a brown-skinned indigenous man. All the people he rules have blue skin. There's so much going on. And for Black Panther, for Ryan Coogler, Nate Moore, and everyone else involved in this Black Panther franchise at Marvel Studios, for them to see the importance of that and to be a bridge. We all remember the hype of the first Black Panther movie. Black people all over the world were ecstatic. Here, across the pond, in Africa, it was something that Black people all over the world shared in. And, you know, you had a few comments, oh, well, when are we going to get a Latino Black Panther, which is ignorant because there are Black people in Latin America. But for Ryan Coogler and the Black Panther staff to be a bridge to Latin America, and now because you've got Tenoch Huerta playing the Submariner, one of the most important characters in Marvel, who's been a part of Marvel since the 1930s, for them to make a bridge and now allow Latin America, specifically a part of Latin America that's not used to being seen in a heroic way, and letting them share in that, the power of seeing yourself in heroic roles, I just think it's beautiful.
What you were just saying, like everything you just said, just to see it visually, it's powerful in ways that a lot of us can't explain or express. But I'm hoping that this is the beginning of something more.
I do think it will be. I mean, we've seen it. Marvel has made a conscientious effort. You know, they realized that their first decade was not very diverse. And it started with Avengers Endgame and giving Anthony Mackie Captain America's shield and saying, you're the next Captain America, which isn't some political moment. That's something that happened in the comics as well. One thing I love about Marvel Studios is that they follow the blueprint of the comics. They're pretty dedicated to doing that. But we've seen it with Anthony Mackie being Captain America. We've seen it with Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel was beautiful, not just in introducing us to a new superhero that's been very popular over at Marvel Comics for the last decade, but also introducing us to cultures that we're not used to seeing on the forefront in front of the camera. Oscar Isaac playing Moon Knight. You know, the character is not historically Latino in the comics, but I spoke to Oscar about that, and he does know it's a big deal that he's the first Latino actor to have a lead role at Marvel Studios, and we're going to see that again with Tenoch Huerta in Wakanda Forever. You know, it just goes back to everyone being able to see themselves. I mean, if you ask me what the best movie for Marvel Studios post-Endgame has been, it would have to be Shang-Chi for me. Shang-Chi was amazing. And now you have Asians everywhere who can see themselves as a superhero as well. It's a natural progression that I think properly reflects the world that we live in.
So wrapping things up, David, what are you looking forward to watching for the rest of the year?
You know, this is going to be a big year. I think Wakanda Forever is going to be the big cinematic superhero event of this year. We've also got Andor coming up and Star Wars. I've already seen that, and it looks like it's going to be pretty good. 2022 is going to be a big year for people like us who are into this stuff.
David Betancourt, a comic culture reporter for The Washington Post. Culture Shift's Tia Graham spoke with him. You're listening to Culture Shift live here on 101.9 WDET.